thank you for being here tonight. This is going to be a very, very interesting meeting, symposium, and opportunity for us to exchange some thoughts and ideas. I'm Bob Gracie, and I'm the Vice President for Research at UTSA. And on behalf of Ricardo Romo and all of us at UTSA, I wanted to thank you for being here and to welcome you to being here to discuss these issues on Texas Water Symposium. Bob Hendrickson is going to do the introductions from this point on, and Bob is from the Office of Provost at Texas Tech. And Bob, thank you for organizing this very much. Thank you.
I just want to add my welcome on behalf of the partners that are collaborating to sponsor this Texas Water Symposium series. Until now, last year and the first lecture this year, we've gone to very small venues in the Hill Country, had a fairly small turnout, but we've relied on the power of Texas Public Radio to get the program out to a lot of people here in Central Texas. So we're very grateful to UTSA for providing this wonderful venue tonight. We've already met with the scientists from UTSA, Dr. Gracie, to plan incorporating them into our series next year and doing a little bit better, more focused look at some of the issues that the UTSA Center for Water Research is focused on. So I'll just turn the program over to Robert Potts, who is now the president of the Dixon Water Foundation. Robert's got the enviable task of moderating tonight and trying to control two politicians as they expound on these issues.
Thank you, Bob. I think we're all in for a real treat tonight. If you look at water policy and water law in Central Texas over the last 15 to 20 years, and you were to pick two people that you wanted to hear from to talk about what's gone in the past and what's the future looks like, you could not do any better than the two people that we have here. Doug Miller and Robert Puente have been involved with these issues for 15 to 20 years, not only involved with them, but leading the efforts to try and resolve them and wrestling with the very, very difficult issues that they're going to be talking about tonight. Our first speaker tonight is going to be Robert Puente, and I'll give an introduction to him and then tell you about Doug Miller right before he speaks. But Robert Puente has just retired last year from the Texas House of Representatives, where he was involved from the beginning in water issues. He was really viewed as the go-to guy on water in the House for years and years, and was chair of the Natural Resources Committee of the House. As you may remember, we had a major water legislation passed last session, and by all accounts, Robert Puente was the driving force to get that passed. Not only has he done a lot in this area over the last 15 to 20 years, but he's now the interim CEO and president at San Antonio Water Systems, which, of course, is the largest water purveyor in the region and is, of course, intricately involved with looking at number of water supply issues going forward. So we're very fortunate to have Robert Puente speak to us first.
Good evening, everyone. And first of all, thank you to Texas Tech. Thank you to Texas Public Radio. And, of course, thank you to our host here, UTSA, for inviting me to speak. And frankly, when I left the legislature, I was so afraid nobody would ask my opinion anymore that I'm honored to be here to discuss some of these issues with you. As everyone says usually at the end of their presentation for are there any questions, I really want to emphasize that to please ask questions, especially at an institution like this and the time that you took out to come here to listen to us speak, probably the best information you're going to get is by the interaction that we're going to have with the questions that you ask and hopefully the answers that we're able to give you on those questions. So I do encourage you to do that and to please ask questions and have a good communication going on regarding the issues that we're presenting to you. First of all, let me tell you about SAWS and about what we're doing over there. It's an independent municipal utility. It's owned by the City of San Antonio. It's governed by seven trustees. One of the trustees is always the mayor of San Antonio, and that individual gets to appoint the chairman of the San Antonio Water System. We were created in 1992 because of infighting within three city agencies, the wastewater, the water delivery, and the reuse agency. All within the City of San Antonio were just fighting each other, actually competing for permits, and they were all merged into one and taken outside of the city. So in 1992, SAWS was created. We currently have 347,000 customers, 385,000 wastewater customers, 74 recycled customers and their entities such as Toyota and Microsoft, and 25 heating and cooling customers. We have almost 1,600 employees. Our 2008 budget was $440 million. And as you can imagine, with that, you have to plan. You have to make sure that you're doing what you need to be doing to supply this region with water. And so we have a 50-year water resource plan goals. Some of those goals, for example, are long-term water conservation, and I'll talk about that in more detail. But this helps postpone the dependence on costly supplies. Effective drought management, you have to plan for that day in the fifth day, excuse me, that day in August that is at the fifth year of that historic drought of the 50s. You have to plan for that. You just can't let it go by chance. Diversification, that essentially means greater use of non-Edwards water. Regional partnership, fulfilling the needs of San Antonio and its growth, but also recognize that we are regional, and we have to have regional partners, and we have to reach out to the areas around for either joint products, joint projects, actually supplying our community with regional water supplies. And affordability. Can't do all of this planning without making the product that you're selling affordable to its customers. Our plan that we have has to be updated regularly. When I was hired to be the interim president, one of my first tasks by the board was to update our water plan. And prior plans, get altered. You might recall GBRA, SAWS, and SARA, San Antonio River Authority, had a joint project that a lot of money was spent on, and essentially SAWS in 2005 looked at that project and decided it wasn't cost-effective, and they pulled out of it. Additional sources of water are always looked at for feasibility. The latest technologies are evaluated for possible incorporation into the plan. We have to have a current update progress for community leaders, for our board, for city council. And whatever version we come up with has to be presented to CAP, which is our citizens advisory panel, our SAWS board, our city council, and hopefully finally by Region L, all for their understanding and hopefully approval of that plan. And so the plan that we have at SAWS right now is a 2005 plan, and we're currently updating it. And as you can imagine, since 2005 to 2008, our population has grown tremendously, much more so than what was projected in 2005. And surprisingly, the demand projections are down, which essentially means water conservation. Per capita use, we have continued to ratchet down, so the projected demand is down a little bit. We have to incorporate increased cost into these projects. We have to assess and understand the impact of external opposition and regulatory authorities. TCEQ, EAA, groundwater districts, these are all entities that can regulate projects, and we have to continually assess them and try to understand the opposition and try to see if that opposition can be overcome. And we have to incorporate the changes that Senate Bill 3 made on our pumping limits. You know, we had the 2005 plan, and in 2005, we were projected to have to come down to 400,000 acre-feet of possible pumping out of the Edwards Aquifer, from 450 to 400,000 acre-feet. Senate Bill 3 did the reverse. It actually increased the yield up to 572,000 acre-feet. So that alone was a good reason that you should update the plan. Also, our ASR, Aquifer Storage and Retrieval, which is a project that I'll talk about more later in Southern Bear County, is going from 28,000 acre-feet to 50,000 acre-feet. And I'll explain why and how that is going. And we have to ensure growth and supplies. Water conservation, we have one of the best programs in the country. Recycled water, we've made huge strides in it in the past year. In the past 8 years, we have the largest direct recycled system in the nation. The aquifer storage and retrieval, it's a long-awaited underground reservoir of water. Trinity Aquifer Projects, that helps us diversify from the Edwards. Edwards Aquifer Permits, we're finally done with the permitting system that the EAA, the legislature, set up. Canyon Lake, another partnership with GBRA, which is also an opportunity to diversify from the Edwards. Carrizo Aquifer in Bear, Gonzales, and Wilson counties, whether it's the regional or the local Carrizo project that we're trying to diversify our water supplies. As y'all may know, as y'all know also, we have a long-term project with LCRA that's projected to bring up to 100,000 acre feet to this community in the long term, 2025. And so these are all projects that are on board, and I'd like to speak about each one in a little bit more detail. Water conservation. In 1988, 20 years ago, we pumped 190,737 acre feet out of the Edwards. 190,737. 20 years later, 2008, 2007, we pumped 190,329, almost the same. Despite our 50% growth in our service area, we are pumping the same amount of water out of the Edwards Aquifer. So you can imagine 20 years ago, this area, UTSA, all this growth around here. In the past 20 years, we've pumped the same amount of water out of the Edwards Aquifer. The main reason we're able to do that, yes, there's added diversification by the Trinity Aquifer, by the local Carrizo, but that's very minimal. The actual driving force to that was water conservation. We are trying to ensure that we spend enough money on water conservation to get down to 116 gallons per person per day. 116, that's a phenomenal number if you compare it to some of the other areas in the state. Dallas has over a 200 number person per gallon per day. So we're increasing the spending. What we're actually doing at SAWS and what SAWS has been doing for a while, and if you can imagine a business telling this to its customers, we're telling our customers, use less of our product, buy less of our product. And not only are we telling them that, we are giving them products and money to use less of our product. This morning I was at a press conference at the AT&T Center, the home of the Spurs, where SAWS contributed $190,000 to retrofit their total AT&T center, the shower, the locker rooms, the showers, the urinals, outdoor, recycled for the landscaping, the cooling with recycled water. We contributed, gave $190,000, and it's a county-owned facility, so it's not just for the Spurs. They're going to save $41,000 a year. And so we're paying them to use less of our product. But the reason we can do that, the reason we have these toilet programs where we exchange toilets for low-flush toilets, shower heads, is that we can calculate that we save money not only by giving them $190,000, getting $41,000 less, them buying less of our product, but we can show that it saves us money in the long run by not having to get additional water project off the ground, by pushing back projects that may have been scheduled to be online by 2010, by being able to close down a wastewater treatment plant that had becoming obsolete, and it was cheaper to close it down than retrofit it, than to remodel it, because our other treatment plant can handle the load. Why? Because we have more, we have less wastewater in the system because we're using less water. So not only can we show that a project doesn't have to be built or can be pushed back, we're also able to show that with recycling that water, there's less wear and tear on our infrastructure, and all the way down to our wastewater treatment plant, less yes usage of that plant to the ability to actually close one down. So it's a tremendous, tremendous idea about water conservation. It is not as simple as, although very necessary, not as simple as encouraging people to turn off the faucet when they're shaving, to take shorter hours, or to educate our children in fifth grade programs, all very important. But the true savings is these massive retrofits of downtown hotels where we pay for the installation of all the new toilets, the new shower heads, and we're able to show savings, where we, with the state's help, pass legislation that regulates irrigators and the installation of irrigation systems. So all these things add up with tremendous, tremendous savings. Automated meter reading, an $80 million investment by SAWS, where we will able to electronically read the meters. And so instead of sending a bill to a customer that all of a sudden is off the charts because they had a leak that they didn't know about, and then they complain, they call us, why is my bill so high? We send someone out there and we show them they have a leak. Now we can show immediately that for whatever reason, their usage is way higher than normal. So we immediately know they have a leak. We can notify them directly. that they have a leak and get it addressed very quickly. That's projected to save 5,000 to 10,000 acre feet, a big range there because it's in its infancy stage, and projected savings of $133 million in the first 15 years. So again, something as simple as an $80 million capital investment will save us $133 million over the next 15 years. So water conservation will always be a big program at SAWS. As a matter of fact, we're increasing the funding by $1 million in our 2009 budget. The recycled system that I talked to you about, the largest in the nation, we are currently, in 2008, celebrated 10 billion gallons of recycled water. As I mentioned, some of our big customers are Toyota and Microsoft. Every golf course in this area is irrigated with recycled water. And Toyota and Microsoft are those ideal type of customers that demand the same amount of water every single month of the year. Other customers, golf courses, people that use it for irrigation of their landscape, they peak. They peak in the summertime. And so we're trying to even that out, understanding that those manufacturing customers are the ideal customers because we can project their need throughout the year. But those that recycled system is very important. Our biggest customer in recycled, other than Toyota and Microsoft, the biggest customer is our own CPS Energy. They we send them about 50,000 acre feet of recycled water that they use for the recycling plant. And still, despite all that, we still discharge almost 100,000 acre feet into the San Antonio River for use on down to the Gulf by other water rights holders, by all the communities between here and the Gulf Coast. I talked about the Twin Oaks Aquifer Storage and Recovery project. That is a project in Southern Bear County where essentially the EAA allows us to pump a certain amount of water out of the aquifer. And so if we don't pump that, we lose it. It's a calendar year permit. And so we pump our limit. We take what we can out of the aquifer. If we don't use it all, the rest we store in an underground reservoir. So this underground reservoir, you know, we're pumping from all the stations throughout Bear County, and we continually send water into this underground storage. When it was designed and built, we thought it could hold 28,000 acre feet. Well, it's holding 50,000 acre feet now. And so you can imagine a 50,000 firm yield project right under our feet that nobody can see, and that's the hard thing about trying to get people excited about it. But it's a great tool, a great management tool, a great opportunity for us to use our full allotment from the EAA and still be able to store it. And so it's essentially a savings. It's triple the yield of apple white that we did not build during the 1990s. It's a great opportunity, and that 50,000 acre feet storage right now it is probably going up because right now we're still putting water in there, and so we'll see how much bigger it can hold. And it's an engineering marvel how the water underground, the Edwards water, just stays there. You can imagine a balloon full of water put into an aquarium. That's how it is, and it stays intact. That Edwards water stays intact. And we monitor it throughout with monitoring wells surrounding that area where we draw water out and test it, and we can see that it's still Edwards water as opposed to Carrizo Aquifer water or Wilcox water. We can still identify it as Edwards water. South of here is the Carrizo Aquifer and the Wilcox Aquifer. We have a project where we have out of the same area where we have the ASR, an ability to get 6,400 acre feet of water out of the Carrizo Aquifer to help out with the diversification that we wanted. It is the first phase was completed this September. The second phase, we're looking at February 2010, and that project cost roughly $19 million. Regional Carrizo is the name of the project that includes Wilson and Gonzales County. We are currently in Gonzales County seeking leases, signing individuals up that want to lease their water to us. We're facing some opposition there. Obviously, there's a very parochial feeling about the water, and the permits that we're seeking there are being contested, and we're currently in that permitting phase. This project is expected to deliver 45,000 acre-feet to this region by 2019. Another big project is called the Western Integration, which is essentially a pipeline from the ASR, from the aquifer storage and retrieval, up towards the northwest, the Anderson Pump Station. That integration line is exactly what it means. It helps us integrate all of the different water sources that we're going to be obtaining, so that if regional water, regional Carrizo water comes in, we can put it in through that pipeline to distribute it out throughout our system. And it will also be able to serve our desalinization plant when that gets off the ground, and the local and the regional Carrizo. The desalinization plant is our attempt to get brackish groundwater, treat it, and put it into our system. It's a two-phase project. The first phase is Bexar County only, essentially because of some of the opposition we encountered in Atascosa County, the rural areas. And so we want to prove to them that it works, that we can drill into the Wilcox aquifer and not have it contaminate the Carrizo, which is the freshwater aquifer, and be able to show the local, the regional, and the state authorities that it's a great project. The state of Texas is encouraging the use of brackish groundwater. There's a tremendous, tremendous amount of brackish groundwater in this state. And in this area, the San Antonio Water System is the only entity that can really afford to drill so deep into the aquifer, draw that water out, and treat it and distribute it. The farming community, the agriculture community, has the freshwater Carrizo to do that with. It's too expensive to drill for them to drill all the way down to the Wilcox. And even if they needed to or wanted to, the water is still not suitable for irrigation of their crops. So we are trying to explain to them that the science is there that protects the freshwater aquifer from the brackish aquifer, that there will not be any contamination. And hopefully they accept our science, and we will have that desalinization project off the ground in 2013. I mentioned the LCRA SAWS project. That is a huge and very expensive project that was a legislative bill back in 2001. The idea there is to get water from the LCRA basin. And the way that project works is off-channel reservoirs to capture some of the floodwaters and then is piped back over towards San Antonio. They wanted some that basin wanted some assurances, and it needed to be a project that really was going to be a win-win situation. And in this particular situation, it's win-win-win. Three parties that hopefully will win from this endeavor, and that's the LCRA basin. They win in the sense that we will not be tapping into groundwater. The big economic generator over there is rice. And as you know, rice needs and uses a lot of water. So what we have done through our through the funding of this program is the leveling of rice fields so that the water stays within that confined area instead of leveling off where it just runs off. Sending money to Texas A&M for further study and development of rice varieties that you can have double the crop in one season with one planting as opposed to two different plantings. And so some of the expenses that we are incurring, SAWS is incurring, is paying for Matagorda Bay studies to make sure that it doesn't adversely affect that bay, in-stream flow and aquatic habitat criteria to make sure, again, that it doesn't adversely affect that. And so it's a very expensive project, but one that is justified by, frankly, our inability to know what water is going to cost in 2025. So if we know what it's going to cost then, we can make a better idea. But as you know, the cost of water is unpredictable. Other potential projects on board are recharge initiatives. In other words, trying to get more water into the Edwards Aquifer so that there'll be a bigger supply and a bigger opportunity, a better opportunity to protect the springs. Long-term, again, is water, ocean water desalinization. If you've followed San Antonio press clippings, you'll know that CPS Energy is lobbying our city council for the authority, for the ability to raise rates to fund nuclear a potential nuclear plant. If council does give them that opportunity and if they're going to do it, then obviously SAWS would want to be involved. The biggest cost of a nuclear plant is water. The biggest cost of an ocean desal plant is electricity. So if we site the two close together, it's a good synergy, a good opportunity for both of them to benefit. This is very long term. This is a more like a 50-year plan. Am I okay on time? On time? Finally, it's very, very difficult to do all this. Very, very difficult. The complexity of regulation is just something that's really driving this, some of these issues off the table. One particular situation is called DFCs, Desired Future Conditions. What a groundwater district wants their aquifer to look like in 50 years, their desire to have the aquifer be drawn down or not drawn down. And so what we are finding out that these groundwater districts are putting out these potential numbers that they want their aquifer to look like, not based on science like it's supposed to be, but based on their opposition to a project, based on other regulatory matters, as opposed to what it should be, is the science of how an aquifer can function when you draw water out of it. Is it rechargeable? Is it quickly rechargeable? Does it reject recharge? There's some aquifers in Texas that don't, they're so full they can't take any more water. Other aquifers in the panhandle that is just an understanding that we're actually mining it, we're taking water out of it, and there'll be much less water in 50 years. So these regulatory obstacles are very difficult, very demanding on a system like this. For example, our desalinization plant, after we've spent $30, $40, $50 million, can be wiped off by the mere fact that a groundwater district may say that the desired future condition of the brackish aquifer that nobody can use should be this number, and essentially means we can't pump any more water out of there to treat. So it's a very challenging, it's something that we have to work on, something that the legislature hopefully addresses. But all in all, it's a great job.
Our next speaker is Doug Miller. Doug got involved with water issues when he was on the city council and then mayor of New Braunfels. And in the early stages of the Edwards Aquifer discussion and litigation, Doug was involved trying to make sure the springs in New Braunfels were protected, and has kind of caught the bug, stayed involved with water ever since then. He went on to be on the board of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, and the last half a dozen or so years has been chairman of the board of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, and then just this month was elected to be state representative and will be working on water issues in the state legislature. So it's a great privilege for us to have you, Doug.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate that. Remember, now, Robert was my general manager for the Edwards Aquifer Authority. You're not on my payroll anymore, so you don't have to be glowing in your introduction.
Sure, I meant it all.
There you go. Well, I want to thank a few people. I want to thank Texas Tech for the Texas Water Symposium, and Bob Hickerson. Thank you, Bob. Bob's one of my constituents up in Gillespie County, so we've had a relationship, and Bob's been working on the Hill Country University Center up there that we're trying to develop in Fredericksburg, and along with Texas Tech. I want to thank UTSA, Dr. Gracie, thank you very much, and certainly Dr. Hammond, you know, and all the work that you do with the Center for Water Research, and all the work that y'all are doing here. We're very appreciative from the San Antonio perspective for your efforts, and plead that you continue to keep up your work. The Hill Country Alliance, thank you for helping your sponsorship, and certainly Texas Public Radio. And Robert, thank you for being our host and facilitator tonight. I'm very honored to be here this evening and be on the panel with my friend Robert Puente. Robert and I go back to the early 90s when he came in to the House of Representatives, and I think, wasn't it 1991? When he came in, and all of a sudden he got hit with this issue called the Edwards Aquifer, and we didn't get something accomplished that session, but we came back, and with Robert's help and his leadership, we were able to pass SB 1477 and created the Edwards Aquifer Authority from the old Edwards Underground Water District. And then Robert went on to become certainly chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, and was a great asset, not only for San Antonio but and this region, but for the state of Texas. And Robert once shared with me his philosophy about being chairman is, even though he had a constituency from here in San Antonio, he felt like his position as chairman of the House Natural Resources was to take a broader view and have an outlook for the state of Texas. So I'm very honored to be on a panel with you, sir. And I thank you for your presentation. It sounds like that SAWS has made a lot of progress since the time back in the late 80s, and when the philosophy was pretty much a manana philosophy and the heck with their neighbors. And so I'm glad to hear that with all the efforts that I've had the privilege of being involved in over the last 20 years, that finally I think all of us have come to the realization and recognition that we've got to address the critical issue, the limiting issue, you might say, of our future, water. And first, let me talk about just a little bit of a perspective, and I know we're on radio here, so the listening audience and the audience that's here with us, you know, you have to see that obviously the top of the rung is the state legislature, and the governor has the final say, if you will, about any policy that goes on in this state as far as water goes. They receive a lot of input have created a sort of a system of administering, overseeing, regulating, whatever you will, about water, certainly through the Water Development Board, which was created to set up planning for our water resources and our water needs in Texas. Has been around for a long time, and we have a very complex system in Texas that's different than any other western state, in that we look at surface water, which is water in the rivers and streams and lakes, and our groundwater, which is water that is under the ground that we pull up, like the Edwards or the Carrizo or the Trinity Aquifer. We look at them in two different perspectives from Texas, and that is that surface water is seen as a state ownership or state resource, and groundwater, for the most part, is private ownership. And that stems back to the old rule of capture that's been in existence since the early 1900s with the East case, and now sort of the way we're having to look at it, because of all the growth that has happened in Texas, is a modified rule of capture, if you might say. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Maybe some of the questions, some of the issues we bring up later, is that whole issue of managing groundwater is under attack constantly, but most recently in a case that the Edwards Aquifer Authority is trying to get up to the state Supreme Court so we can have a ruling on. You know, what's creating all this this furor and these issues with water is obviously our population growth. You know, we're sort of blessed and cursed at the same time. We're blessed that we live in one of the best, if not the best, economy in our country. And we have so much going for us. So many people want to move here. Well, that's healthy and good for the economy, but at the same time, it is taxing and sometimes overtaxing our resources. You know, this issue of water and our resources is so complex. You have more people. We've got the same amount of water, sometimes less water when the good Lord doesn't give us rain. So we have a water shortage. And as we all know, water is the lifeblood of the community, any community. We were talking, Dr. Hammond and I were talking before the program today about history, and if you look at the movement of man around this planet, it can all be traced to water. You take the Alamo and the missions, the early missions, all those missions were built next to water. My community, New Braunfels, you could go back there in Landa Park, you know, Native Americans had their camping grounds there. Then the Spanish came by came along and built a small mission. Then the Germans came along and said, here's the confluence of two great rivers, good for power, good for life. But now we've got a situation where there's so many people that have moved to this area, you know, that we say, you know, the challenge that we have is simple, but the solutions are complex. And what Robert just went through was a lot of different solutions that SAWS is looking into, and others, just like SAWS, are researching and studying and trying to develop. And it's which one to go to, how much money do you have available, and how are they all going to work together? I say it's sort of like playing chess. When one piece on the chessboard moves in some way, sometimes minor, sometimes major, everyone else on the board is affected. And that's sort of the way it is here in Texas. And as we try to figure out a solution for San Antonio or the Edwards region or this part of Texas, you know, then that affects some other part of Texas. You know, this population growth, I'm looking at some numbers here, and these come from the state water plan, the 2007 state water plan. Right here in Bexar County, in the next 10, 11 years, we're projected to be at 1.9 million people. By the year 2040, it'll be 2.2 million people. Looking at the counties in the surrounding area, Comal, Gillespie, and Guadalupe, we're seeing like Comal will go from 146,000 people to 233,000 people, almost 100,000 people more over the next 30 years or so. Guadalupe County from 147 to 215, and Kendall County from 50 to almost 80,000. You know, it's important to note that this population growth, you know, is not exclusive to any one county, to any one region, to any one area of Texas. This growth is happening over the entire state, certainly more accentuated in areas like San Antonio, the Dallas-Fort Worth area, Houston, but nevertheless, those are the areas where the resources are going to be needed. As I said earlier, in the scheme of water planning for the state of Texas, in 1957, the Texas legislature created the Texas Water Development Board. And with that board, it gave it a threefold mission to collect and disseminate water-related data, to assist with regional planning and prepare a state water plan, and in the preparation of that plan, up until the late 90s, 1997, SB1 that was sponsored by Senator Brown at that time, it was always a top-down plan. In other words, the state and their infinite wisdom would say, here's your plan, here's how to appropriate and plan for your water needs. In 1997, it was changed to where it was a bottom-up plan, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. And finally, to administer cost-effective financial programs, and it does that through grants and other revenue to or appropriations to help construct water supply, wastewater treatment, flood control, and agricultural water conservation programs. So that just gives you a little background of what the state's responsibility is in helping assist in planning for our future water needs. As I said, in 1997, Senator Brown, I had the privilege of working with him to set up the idea or the system of planning for the future, and our whole concern was, instead of being told what our future needs are going to be from Austin, that we wanted to have more input from the local areas. So they set up the regional water planning groups. 16 of those groups were designated, and they were all to take into account reservoirs, groundwater, and streams, and of course what was available to the areas. Those regional water planning groups, Region L, which meets here in San Antonio, includes Bexar County, were to determine the water demands, determine supplies, especially during drought. They were to determine when and where surface or a surplus of supply or need for additional supplies, to determine social and economic impact of not meeting the needs, to develop the plans, identify unique sites for reservoirs, and propose regulatory, administrative, and legislative recommendations, which they did in the first water plan that was sent to the legislature, I believe in 2005 was when you received our first report. So that's an ongoing effort. I just most recently resigned as a member of Region L, and I think, Robert, you're sitting on it now. Robert Potts was a member of that and in his role as a general manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority. Then coming along under the leadership of Chairman Puente, the groundwater management areas was developed, and 16 GMAs, if you were, to look at a lot of the water planning, a lot of the ideas had been surrounding surface water, certainly because it's controlled and overseen by the river authorities. But nobody was really paying attention to groundwater in those areas where regulatory district or a district like the Edwards Aquifer Authority existed. And so in an effort to try to address that, in 2005, under the leadership of Chairman Puente, House Bill 1763 was passed and set up this idea that he just mentioned about looking at groundwater and the future of groundwater and trying to determine those desired future conditions and the availability of water for those areas. So, you know, we're fortunate now that we've had a greater focus on groundwater and management of those that resource. I think the EAA, fortunately, was ahead of the game in the fact that our desired future conditions were established in the law, you know, 450,000, then down to 400, and now up to 572,000 acre-feet. That's the desired future conditions of the Edwards. You know, something else that came along, you know, about that time too, well, actually in 2007, which is being implemented right now, is the Recovery Implementation Program. Robert and I, at Robert's suggestion, met with the state director from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service early on in 2007, and she had been involved in a RIP, if you will, in Arizona, is what I recall,
Arizona and
New Mexico, and it was very successful in bringing together groups to come up with a solution. I talked about the Edwards Aquifer Authority and the creation of that. One piece of that puzzle, you might say, is what drove us to that point of creating that regulatory authority? What drove us to that position? It wasn't like we all got together one day and said, hey, we need an aquifer authority, you know, because the old Edwards Underground Water District was doing a fine job of research, and in fact, Carol Patterson's here with us. Carol served on that board. But it had no real regulatory teeth, if you will. And what drove us to that point was the endangered species that live in the Comal and San Marcos Springs. Now, I really believe we've moved long beyond the issue of the endangered species. Now, Dr. Arsufi might not like that because he was very involved with it over at Southwest Texas, now Texas State, and gave us a lot of help in that regard. But the reality is that's where we started. That was the impetus to get us moving forward on all of these water projects that we have in this region and the creation of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, because out of that came the endangered species lawsuit and that suit, which took place out in Midland under the jurisdiction of Judge Lucius Mutton. Judge Bunton told us we needed to come up with a solution, go back, and we had a choice. We could either have the federal government dictate water policy to us in our area, or we could come up with a solution ourselves. And fortunately, with the infinite wisdom of the Texas legislature, we created the Edwards-Aquifer Authority. And what I think and what I see is that the Edwards is simply a model, if you will, to develop policy, to develop regulation, to come up with ideas, whether it's desal or recharge and recirculation or whatever it is, that ideas that can be used throughout the state of Texas as we move forward with our water challenges. So in the creation of the Edwards-Aquifer Authority, you know, we came up with a mission. We developed a mission. And our mission, as prescribed, I guess you'd say, by the board, is to manage, enhance, and protect the Edwards-Aquifer System. And the reason it's Edwards-Aquifer System is that I think we've all sort of come to recognize and realize that it's not just the groundwater, the Edwards water that's under our ground here, but it goes all the way from the basin capture area where the drainage comes in, the drainage area, all the way to the San Antonio and other bays. You know, there are actually three river systems that are integrally tied to the Edwards. We have the Nueces River out in Uvalde County, Uvalde, Kinney County, and that drainage area. Then you come to this area here, the San Antonio River, which receives certainly the water, the reuse water that comes from San Antonio, and water from the springs, San Pedro or Breckenridge Springs. And then you have the Guadalupe River Basin. So three of the most important rivers in Texas are tied to this aquifer. You know, it's something like over almost 2 million people in the state of Texas are dependent upon this resource. So protecting the system was critical to the board when we moved forward to not just protecting the aquifer itself. You know, as I said, a lot of people see the aquifer as just where they stick their well in the ground and pump the water up. And actually, you know, it goes much beyond that. There's some 8 counties that are directly involved in the Edwards, and it stretches 180 miles from out in Uvalde and Kinney County all the way through to Hays County that are directly. And then, of course, as I said, you know, much of the bays and estuaries are very dependent upon it. In fact, David Welch from GBRA reported just yesterday in a meeting that I was in, the base flow of the Guadalupe River today, 90% of the base flow comes from the San Marcos and Comal Springs. And so those two rivers, San Marcos and the Guadalupe rivers, are very dependent. So it's not just the species that are dependent upon those spring flows, but all the way to the bays and estuaries. And we saw, I think under SB3, you know, in-stream flows was a critical part, and Parks and Wildlife was very interested in making sure that we had enough flow from those springs to take care of water resources all the way to the bays and estuaries, which are a critical part of that coastal economy. You know, some of the things that I'm going to move along here, but I do want to say some of the most important things that I think that we've done as an authority is to establish some water rights. And in establishment of those water rights, we created a water market and took water to be, if you will, a commodity, something that could be traded on the market that had really never been done before. And in doing so, I think we've set up a system of certainty, or a great deal of certainty, for our permit holders. And with the passage of Senate Bill 3 under Chairman Puente's guidance. You know, we did several things. We were able to enhance environmental flows and address that. We were able to designate reservoirs and preserve water conservation. That was the idea of Senate Bill 3 that was put forth in the 2007 session. And then a piece of Senate Bill 3 was directly tied to the Edwards Aquifer. You know, what we did, as was mentioned, our mission in the beginning of 2007 was to identify some consensus-based approaches to water planning, to balance between the agricultural, commercial, and residential needs, and considering the environmental needs at the same time, add that certainty to the water planning process, and to ensure private property rights. And this was in an attempt to strike a balance for various stakeholders, not only in this area, but I think that Senate Bill 3 was attempting to do that on a statewide basis, too. And so what we were trying to do from the Edwards standpoint, obviously, was to create some certainty for Edwards users. We obviously, the things that we did and were focused on were raising the pumping cap, as Robert Puente said, to from 450 to 572, to try to create some critical period rules or cutbacks that were in state law as opposed to subject to the whim of a board that could change on a frequent basis. And it also allowed sort of a quirk that had happened back in 93 was the prohibition to own and construct recharge facilities. We did that so that would be available to the Edwards because of some of the things that we felt like we wanted to do, and you know, in order to enhance our water resources here in our region. Finally, I mentioned the recovery implementation program, and this is a, let me say that this is a stakeholder-driven process. And I know that some of you in the audience have attended, maybe many of you have attended these meetings. And this was the idea that was brought forth by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And Senator Hager quickly grabbed onto the idea and put it into the legislation as an idea of where we could work together to establish some deadlines, if you will, and do so with a thought of reporting back to the legislature as the progress that goes along. And it wouldn't be just the Edwards Aquifer Authority that would do it. It'd be a greater group of people. So with that in mind, hopefully, we had a report from Dr. Robert Gulley yesterday at our board meeting that they're making progress. Robert Potts served as chairman up until recently, but Dr. Gulley is hopeful as we move along through this process that we're going to be able to make progress, and they're on track for what was prescribed in the law, so we're very grateful for that. Let me talk just a little bit about, in closing, about some of the challenges that I think we all face. Obviously, both Robert and myself have spoken about the growth. You know, population growth is going to continue to stress our water resources. We need more clarification on the roles of different agencies and different organizations. There's still a lot of overlapping, and we want to make sure that we use our state resources, our local resources, our regional resources in the most productive manner. I think from a perspective standpoint that we need to have a broad perspective, and you heard Robert talk about all of the ideas that SAWS has on the table, and it's having that broad perspective about coming up with solutions that's going to, I think, carry us into the future and safeguard our future as far as water goes. And finally, I think that one of the most important parts, just like the universities that have worked together to put on this program, we need to collaborate as agencies along with the state legislature and everyone to put together the most effective and efficient plan for our water resources for the future. And I look forward to serving you from the state level. It's been a pleasure to serve this region as a board member since the inception of the Edwards Aquifer Authority and most recently as a chairman. And I'm excited about going to Austin and hopefully in some small way filling the void that was created with the loss of Robert Puente from our state legislature. So thank you all very much, and I appreciate your attendance this evening.
With that, we will close this particular Texas Water Symposium. Let's give these two speakers a great round of applause.